This morning, America's first news starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
No rule changes. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka, on this Thursday, January 20th. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Senate Democrats have failed to alter the filibuster procedure, which would have allowed them to muscle through election bills.
In a Q&A with reporters, President Biden addressed issues like Russian aggression, Build Back Better, and the midterm elections.
The NASDAQ has entered correction territory. It's now more than 10% below its all-time closing high set back in November.
And why current polling suggests Joe Biden has become one of the most unpopular presidents.
Coronavirus cases are going, up, not down. You've got inflation going up, not down. Biden's facing on the international stage. You have Russia possibly, readying to invade Ukraine. At home, his domestic agenda is stalled, both his Build Back Better plan and voting rights stalled by Democrats.
Lauren Gambino at The Guardian on the rough patch for the Biden administration 1 year in. Another swing and a miss for Democrats. This time it's officially their effort within their own party to change the Senate's filibuster procedures to push through stalled election bills. 52 lawmakers opposed the rule change, with two Democratic senators siding with all Republicans in the evenly split Senate, including Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona and Joe Manchin of West Virginia.
We've all talked about how many times rules have been changed. We've changed them, but we changed them with the rules. We didn't break the rules to change the rules. But all of a sudden now we just can't do it anymore. Just got to blow it up.
Democrats have been arguing that Republicans are trampling on voting rights by tolerating new state laws led by GOP legislatures. Republicans say the Democrats are mischaracterizing the state's changes in a bid to grab power, and that the legislation would weaken steps meant to bolster election integrity. Utah Republican Mitt Romney, by the way, has said a bipartisan group of senators discussing changes now includes about a dozen people. In a nearly two-hour news conference, President Biden said he believes he has outperformed and delivered enormous progress on COVID. Regarding his stalled tax and spend plan known as Build Back Better, he admitted yesterday that he'll have to break it into pieces to pass some of it. Mr. Biden said he would continue to push for passage of Democratic-backed election bills.
All I can say is I'm going to continue to make the case why it's so important to not turn the electoral process over to political persons who were set up deliberately to change the outcome of elections.
He argued that a failure to pass them could raise the likelihood that the coming midterms would be illegitimate. He also predicted Russia would make a move against Ukraine, adding that the U.S. response might differ if the country launched a minor incursion, as he called it, like a cyber attack, instead of a full-blown military invasion. A couple of other notes, he had no apologies for the debacle in Afghanistan, and he did not address the issue of crime. Well, after winning more votes than any presidential candidate in American history, President Biden is now, just 12 months later, one of the country's most unpopular presidents. Here with a look at his struggles and whether there's enough political time to fix them is Lauren Gambino, political correspondent at The Guardian. Lauren, set the scene.
Biden enters his second year in a really tough spot. We've got coronavirus cases are going, up, not down. You've got inflation going up, not down. Biden's facing on the international stage. You have Russia possibly, readying to invade Ukraine. At home, his domestic agenda is stalled, both his Build Back Better plan and voting rights stalled by Democrats and Republicans, of course, but his own party. And so all of this has sort of fed an environment where his approval ratings are just really taking a hit. And Biden, it's unclear what he's going to do next and how he's going to kind of navigate out of this period. And it's really a stark change from where he was. If we look back at the 100-day coverage, he was in a he was in a pretty good place. Vaccinations were rising. The economy looked good. His approval ratings were pretty solid given where we are. Some of it's baked in. You know, we're a very partisan nation at the moment. And so, you know, your approval ratings aren't going to be off the charts. But nevertheless, they were in a good spot. And we've just seen a total reversal.
Yeah. Boy, even the Quinnipiac poll, right? 33% approval rating for the president.
And everyone will say, I think that's an outlier. But for me, the question is, you know, is that the tip of the iceberg? Are we headed that way? Because it is very low. And, like we said, many of the other polls have him, you know, in the low 40s. But that is certainly, an alarm, a red flag for the administration.
Yeah. If not, I know it's a weird question to ask, I guess, because he came into office amid the coronavirus. But if it were not for COVID, would his standings be any better?
It is a hard question to answer. I mean, one of the things I tried to get at in this piece is multiple pollsters running these focus groups, but also running polls. They've found that voters don't blame Biden for the coronavirus, and they don't blame him for the economy, but they are frustrated with where we're at, and they're blaming the president because of that reality. And at the same time, there are experts and Democratic Party strategists who blame Biden for setting expectations too high. So coming in saying, "I'm going to shut down this virus," July of this year, there was talk of maybe declaring independence from the virus. And certainly now we're, in this new difficult wave of Omicron, and people are just feeling like, I thought I elected you to deal with this, and now I'm still dealing with the virus, and we've got confusing safety guidance from federal officials. Why can't we get this under control?
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Lauren Gambino, political correspondent at The Guardian. Her story is called "Why Is Biden One of the Most Unpopular U.S. Presidents?" Also, in your piece, you referenced that he has now gotten, I guess, little credit, the president, for the $1 trillion infrastructure bill, the American Rescue Plan from last year. Do we have short memories? Are we saying, what have you done for me lately? Or what's happened with that?
It's so interesting. Voters got checks in the mail, and yet they don't credit the Biden administration for doing anything for them. They say, we don't see any of this. And I think partly it's the fault of the administration for not doing more to sell their achievements. That was something they said they had learned from the Obama years. You've got to really sell the benefits of your legislation. And so I think they didn't do enough there. But also what we're hearing out of Washington is Democrats fighting against Democrats. They're fighting over all of the things that they haven't been able to accomplish. And we've heard kind of very little about what they have. So I think that's probably a part of it as well.
Is there time to right the ship, given the nature of the politics, when Senator Joe Manchin and Senator Kyrsten Sinema are on your team?
This is the multi-trillion dollar question. It's going to be very difficult. It's going to be a bit of a dance of trying to convince voters that what the administration has done so far is big and important and will improve their lives, and that they're going to keep fighting, and it's worth keeping their majorities in Congress so that they can, if they don't get these bills through before the 2022 midterms, that they can do it after. And that's going to be the real challenge.
Thanks, Lauren. That is Lauren Gambino, political correspondent at The Guardian. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Thursday. The Supreme Court has cleared the way for a House committee to begin receiving White House records related to last year's attack on the U.S. Capitol. It rejected a request last evening from former President Trump to block their release. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
The action by the court came in an unsigned order, refusing to stop a federal appeals court decision in favor of the House panel and open the door for the National Archives to start delivering documents immediately. The Democratic-led committee has said it needs the records to understand any role Mr. Trump may have played in fomenting the violence that unfolded last January 6th. His supporters stormed the Capitol in an effort to keep Congress from formally certifying Mr. Biden's 2020 presidential election victory. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. Mr. Trump and his allies have waged an ongoing battle with the committee, seeking to block access to documents and witnesses. The former president has sought to invoke a legal principle known as executive privilege, a stance rejected by lower courts. Justice Clarence Thomas alone noted that he would have granted Mr. Trump's request. 19 minutes now after the hour on This Morning. Here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
The Senate has blocked a sweeping pair of voting rights bills and stymied proposed changes to the chamber's rules after months of debate over how far Congress needs to go to protect democracy. Republicans voted against advancing legislation that would expand early and mail-in voting and make Election Day a national holiday. A motion to end debate on the voting rights measure failed in a 51-49 vote. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell.
The President of the United States and the Majority Leader of the Senate have made breaking the Senate a central part of their plan for America.
A voting on changing Senate rules failed by a 52-48 margin.
Number two.
Facing high daily COVID cases, major legislative defeats in Washington, and a souring U.S. electorate, President Biden defended his course of action. In his first year in office, during a news conference at the White House, Biden says he didn't overpromise and blamed Republicans for refusing to work with him. He says he feels confident big chunks of the Build Back Better legislation will still go through.
I think it's clear that we would be able to get support for the $500+ billion for energy and the environment issues that are there.
Number three.
Two Marines were killed and others injured after a 7-ton military vehicle rolled over in Jacksonville, North Carolina. Highway Patrol Sergeant Devin Rich.
There was a total of 19 personnel on the truck. There was two confirmed fatalities.
The Marines were stationed at Camp Lejeune. The University of Michigan has announced a $490 million settlement in a case that involved more than 1,000 people who said they were sexually assaulted by a former sports doctor over the course of nearly four decades. The university had been in mediation to resolve multiple lawsuits by mostly men who said Dr. Robert Anderson sexually abused them during routine medical examinations. The federal government is moving forward with a test program to let teenagers drive big rigs across state lines. Currently, truckers who cross state lines must be at least 21, but an apprenticeship program designed to help ease supply chain backlogs would let 18 to 20-year-old truckers drive outside their home states. Safety advocates say the program runs counter to data showing younger drivers get in more crashes than older ones.
Thank you, Jen. Hey, glad you're with us. A new survey by Bankrate.com finds that just 44% of us could cover an unplanned $1,000 expense, such as a car repair or emergency room bill, from savings. Is that better or worse than it's been? Insight from Greg McBride, chief financial analyst at Bankrate. Greg, what are we learning?
Well, there's good news and there's bad news. Good news is we've saw the highest percentage of Americans can cover an unplanned $1,000 expense out of savings than we've seen in any of the 8 years we've been polling on this. Bad news is it's just 44%. And so that means more than half of Americans are still in a position where they couldn't cover an unplanned expense of $1,000 with savings and they would have to resort to something else.
Wow. So I'm just kind of thinking broadly here. All the government stimulus that went out, the child tax credit payments, commuting expenses largely back in our pockets. Where's the money?
That explains the needle moving a little bit. We did see the needle move. Didn't move very much, but it did move. Okay. And you are seeing that reflective of the fact that there is a focus on rebuilding emergency savings that had been depleted early on in the pandemic, building savings that may have never been there, or just adding to the cushion that was already there. I think the one thing pandemic did is really underscored the importance of having this rainy day fund. A lot of people got that memo, but they're having a tough time really moving the needle on getting that money put away.
Well, we got that memo like 12 years ago following the Great Recession.
Yeah, you would think. We do tend to see coming out of recessions, you do see a pickup in focus on things like saving. What caught up with us after that last recession was year after year after year with pretty stagnant income. And that really acted as a headwind on progress. And we only really started to see progress in the years in terms of income growth in the later years of the economic expansion. Then along comes the pandemic. And we all know what that's done in terms of income disruption, throwing millions of people out of work very quickly. They're getting back to work, but then it takes time to rebuild that savings.
Yeah.
And I think what you're seeing is that there's still a lot of people that are still in that position where they're trying to rebuild or just add to what may have been an initially pretty meager savings cushion.
I'm speaking with Greg McBride, chief financial analyst at Bankrate.com. They've got a new survey that finds just 44% of Americans are able to cover a $1,000 emergency expense. And believe it or not, that number is as high as it's been in some time. So for those, I guess, the 56% of Americans who could not cover that expense, how, or with, say, cash or emergency savings, how would they cover it?
We saw a very high reliance on borrowing, and that really continues to be the case. But I think where that's really troubling is on a couple of fronts. Interest rates are going to go up this year. The cost of that debt burden is growing to grow over time, particularly if you have variable rate debt. What was the top form of debt people would utilize for this unplanned expense? Putting it on a credit card and financing that over time. Tends to be very high interest rate debt. About 20% of people pointed to that. 10% said they would borrow from family members or friends. And about 4% said they would take a personal loan. And outside of the borrowing realm, about 1 in 7 said that they would come up with that $1,000 by foregoing spending on other things. So that could be skipping that vacation that was being planned for spring break, or maybe putting off the purchase of that new iPhone or something in order to pay that unplanned expense.
Thanks, Greg. Greg McBride, chief financial analyst at Bankrate.com. 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Uncomfortable work attire is a thing of the past. If you're still trapped in suits and ties, make it your New Year's resolution to go casual at work. But don't dress down. Get some casual style that fits anywhere. That's what Cuts Clothing is designed for, to fit you and any occasion perfectly. That's how I feel about my t-shirts from Cuts. They look and feel great. Buttery soft. They move with me whenever I'm at the mic or at the gym. And while I could go on about their custom-engineered Pika Tri-Blend fabric, you really have to wear it to understand how soft it is. It's the ultimate blend of high-quality cotton, polyester, and spandex. The result is what GQ magazine calls the only shirt worth wearing. And now it's worth even more because it's an even better value. Cuts Clothing is work leisure apparel for the sport of business. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's C-U-T-S. cutsclothing.com/Gordon for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing. cutsclothing.com/Gordon. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday, January 20th. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Democrats failed to change the filibuster rules to pass election bills. Supreme Court clears the way for Trump's January 6th documents to be given to Congress. A storm expected to dump snow from the Ohio Valley to the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast today. NASDAQ enters correction territory. NBC isn't sending announcers to Beijing for the Winter Olympics due to COVID concerns. They'll call the games from a Connecticut studio. And a high school football team's alternate workout for a good cause. That story in about 20 minutes. Hotels, fitness clubs, tour bus companies, and minor league baseball clubs are part of a long line of businesses seeking billions of dollars in new COVID relief aid if they can overcome opposition from many Republicans who say Congress has already given enough. Behind the scenes with Brody Mullins, reporter at the Wall Street Journal, who has spoken with companies in those industries. Brody, what about minor league baseball teams?
Yeah, almost all minor league baseball teams are independently owned. There are a few that are owned by Major League Baseball. In this case, as their lobbyists come to Congress to try to get some stimulus relief, only the clubs that are independently owned would qualify for money from the government under the bill that's being pushed.
And they want what exactly?
So minor league baseball teams, just like many other businesses in 2020 when COVID first started spreading, lost a lot of business. In their case, their entire 2020 season was canceled. If you remember with Major League Baseball, the season was delayed for a little bit. Then they came back and had a shortened season and playoffs and a World Series, without fans. But Major League Baseball makes a lot of money from TV, of course. Minor League Baseball, one, doesn't have the TV revenues. And two, more importantly, the season was completely called off. So every minor league team had to lay off people, not hire groundkeepers, you know, not have turnstile operators, there's no hot dogs being sold, et cetera, et cetera. So they're coming to Congress and saying, hey, you know, can we get some money to help keep our operations in business? Last year, they did have a season, but it was still shortened. They had plenty of restrictions and revenues were still down. So they're among many, many, many companies trying to get a little more help from Congress these days.
So how come they apparently were overlooked in the first round of help?
You know, that's a good question. There have been many stimulus, COVID stimulus bills that have gone through Congress so far, registering a total of billions and billions and billions of dollars. One special fund was called the Shuttered Venue Act in the last 18 months, and it created a pool or stream of money for concert halls and Broadway and other venues, very much like baseball teams, stadiums, that had to close down. That bill passed. The minor league baseball owners sort of hoped that they were a part of it, and turned out that they were excluded from it. They were specifically barred from getting that money. So it's from qualifying for that fund. So as soon as they realized that, they turned around and started their own lobbying effort to get money specifically for minor league baseball. They have gotten a legislation introduced in the House and Senate. I would say that legislation is relatively stalled, but then there's this new effort right now by many businesses to try to get further COVID relief, and minor league baseball is trying to get in on the act, as it were, with that legislation. As part of expanding their base of support, they've also included new money in the minor league baseball bill for other minor league sports, hockey, basketball, etc. So it's now all minor league sports are trying to get some relief from their losses in the last 2 years.
We're speaking with Brody Mullins, investigative reporter at the Wall Street Journal. His story is called Omicron Surge Spurs New COVID-19 Relief Push in Congress. Gym owners on that list also. What is it that they're seeking?
So look, almost every U.S. business and industry has a decent case to make that they've lost a lot of money specifically from COVID or mask mandates or government shutdowns, et cetera. The gyms say they were the first to shut down, the last to open up, that cities, states, municipalities made sure that they closed because they were indoor facilities, and people, you know, you don't want to wear a mask when you're on the treadmill, so people thought there were places that could spread the coronavirus pretty easily. Congress's first big attempt at helping all businesses, the Paycheck Protection Act, was based on looking at aid from the government according to payroll and salaries. Gyms say, well, you know, we don't really have a lot of payroll and salaries, but we have these huge overhead expenses in big facilities, but we don't have that many people who work actually at the gyms. So they say, well, while we technically qualified, the way it was set up doesn't, you know, kind of disadvantaged gyms. So they're saying they've lost, you know, billions and billions of dollars, that I think a 15% or so of gyms have permanently shut down. They also make the case that's interesting that, you know, a really good way of combating COVID, as we know, is for people to be healthy and to not be obese and to, you know, have strong bodies. And they're saying that, you know, that's what they do.
Thanks, Brody. Brody Mullins, investigative reporter with The Wall Street Journal. Hey, thanks for joining us. Welcome into Friday Eve. It is time now for the Mic Drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we know that food delivery has increased exponentially in the past 2 years, and with that, the debate on how much to tip. The latest comes via Reddit, where a post there went viral after a Canadian man shared his story of what happened to him during a recent food delivery. In the post, the man said a delivery driver dropped off his food and gave the driver a $10 tip. Not enough for the driver, apparently, who proceeded to voice his displeasure via a note left on the man's car. The note read, "Here's some spare change. You clearly need it more than I do. Jeez. Keep it for your next delivery driver's tip." And next to the note in a plastic bag was a handful of coins. The post quickly went viral and stirred up lots of discussion, with many defending the man who got the food, saying that a $10 tip for a 10-minute drive is nothing to sneeze at. Some took it to extremes. One commenter says that they'd rather starve than have to deal with delivery services again, and others wondered, well, why we even have to tip at all.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. It made me think, you know, the $10, that's That's a terrific tip.
Yeah.
But you can't measure tips based on the volume of food, right? If it was a $200 order from a restaurant versus a $12 pizza, you don't tip based that way, right? The service, it's not based on service. It's purely a delivery, regardless of the volume of food.
Right, yes.
So that $10 is awfully good.
It seems like it, because it seems like this guy was by himself, so I couldn't imagine it was a huge amount of food. You know, probably one bag full, and again, you know, a 10-minute drive from wherever the place was.
Holy cow.
Yeah, my biggest concern these days is that I don't carry a lot of cash. So if it's a local delivery driver, you know, that I actually call up the place and have them come, I don't always have cash on me. So I got to make sure I, you know, put it on the card when
That's
I call
what I do,
in,
yeah.
And then they show up, and then I'm scrambling. I'm looking through my drawers looking for cash if I forget to, you know, give the tip when I order. So that's my biggest issue when
I'm
it comes to deliveries and tipping these days.
Well, this guy apparently is in the wrong business. Delivery is apparently not for him.
He might need to be part of the Great Resignation. And with superheroes dominating the culture these days, you could forgive some people for almost believing that they were living in a world inhabited by Caped Crusaders and supervillains. The Missouri State Highway Patrol is reassuring the public that the Joker is not on the loose after a staff member sent an emergency alert to mobile devices. Missouri residents received alerts from the Highway Patrol Tuesday warning residents of Gotham City to be on the lookout for a purple and green 1978 Dodge 3700 GT with license plate number You Kid Me, a description that matches the vehicle used by Jack Nicholson as the Joker in the 1989 Batman movie. The law enforcement agency explained in a Twitter post that the Clown Prince of Crime is not on the loose in Missouri, which does not have a place called Gotham City. The message, they say, was meant to be a test, but someone incorrectly selected the wrong option, allowing the message to be broadcast to the public.
Ooh.
And that's all it takes, is like checking the wrong box on the computer screen, and then boom, everybody thinks the Joker's running loose.
Right. Well, at least it was this type of story, and not a practice one for saying evacuate town immediately, like one of those.
I guess we're hopeful there.
Goodness. Thank you, Mike. Podcasts have changed the way you get your news, entertainment, politics, everything. They've rewritten the script, literally. Well, there's another exciting development that's rewritten the script, too. Masterworks. Masterworks enables you to diversify your portfolio and potentially protect it from market volatility by investing in contemporary art with Masterworks. They're the fintech startup shaking up the alternative investing landscape, letting you build a portfolio of fine art without spending millions. Basquiat, Picasso, Warhol. Invest in paintings by iconic artists like these with Masterworks. Their industry-leading research team has created the first and only platform where anyone can buy and trade shares of paintings, giving you the same access enjoyed by some millionaires and billionaires for generations. And now our listeners get priority access to their latest offerings at masterworks.art/Gordon. Join a new generation of investors at masterworks.art/Gordon. See important disclaimers at masterworks.io/disclaimer. Hey, thanks for being with us. Planning your next trip? A retired airline pilot put together some tips to make the inevitably stressful experience a little better. They're from HumbleDollar.com. Number one, never book a trip with connecting flights unless it's absolutely necessary. Bad things happen when connections are missed. Number two, if you have to connect, don't book a connecting flight. That's the last flight of the day. It leaves no other options if there's a delay or cancellation. Connecting might be cheaper, but it can end up costing you more in the long run. Number three is about pricey airport parking. He says if his trip is longer than a few days, he'll use Uber because it's cheaper and much more convenient. Plus, it saves 20 minutes or more on each end of the trip. And number four, TSA PreCheck is essential, he says. It makes some of the nonsense go away. Sign up online, then go do the required interview. It's absolutely worth the price, he says, and the one-time inconvenience. Next hour, by the way, we'll discuss baggage and rental car tips. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Voting legislation Democrats and civil rights leaders say is vital to protecting democracy collapsed when two senators refused to join their own party in changing Senate rules to overcome a Republican filibuster after an emotional debate. Democrats could not persuade the two holdouts or any Republicans to change Senate procedures. One of the holdouts, Joe Manchin of West Virginia.
We have all talked about how many times rules have been changed. We've changed them, but we changed them with the rules. We didn't break the rules to change the rules. But all of a sudden now we just can't do it anymore. just got to blow it up.
Last night's outcome was a stinging defeat for President Biden and his party.
Number two.
President Biden says he supports Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell's expected move to start tightening monetary policy and wind down measures the central bank used to brace the economy against the pandemic.
Given the strength of our economy and the pace of recent price increases, it's appropriate, as the Federal Chairman, the Fed Chairman Powell has indicated, to recalibrate the support that is now necessary.
Biden says he respects the Fed's independence, but underscored that the central bank is taxed with teeming inflation.
Number three.
The Supreme Court has rejected a request by former President Trump to block White House records from being sent to a House Select Committee investigating the January 6th Capitol riot. The ruling, which Trump cannot appeal, sets the stage for more than 700 pages of Trump White House records to soon be sent by the National Archives to the committee, which has issued a subpoena for them. FBI agents searched the Texas home of Democratic Congressman Henry Cuellar yesterday as they conducted what an agency spokeswoman called court-authorized law enforcement activity. The motive and scope of the search was not immediately known. Cuellar's office issued a statement saying he would fully cooperate with any investigation. NBC will not be sending its announcers and most hosts to the Beijing Olympics due to continued concerns about rising COVID cases and China's strict policy about those who test positive. It will be the second straight games for which the broadcast teams will work mostly out of NBC Sports headquarters in Stamford, Connecticut, rather than the host city. About 250 NBC staffers are already in Beijing. Most are technical staff.
No announcers, no fans.
I know.
What great chemistry we've got coming from Beijing. Thanks, Jen. Thanks for being with us. A high school football team near Pittsburgh may have gotten an off day from their weightlifting due to the snow, but they did not get an off day from their overall workout. Bethel Park High School football players typically meet in the workout room at 9 a.m. when school is closed, but when a snowstorm barreled through the neighborhood earlier this week, their practice moved outdoors. Once the snow was in the forecast, the head coach, Brian DeLallo, tweeted the announcement to his players. He wrote, "Due to expected severe weather, Monday's weightlifting has been canceled. Find an elderly or disabled neighbor and shovel their driveway. Don't accept any money. That's our workout." And the players quickly followed Coach DeLallo's new workout plan. He said first thing Monday morning, his players were texting photos of each other clearing driveways one after another. One homeowner, by the way, said she will pay it back by donating to the school's football program, adding to the players' lesson that day. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.